Okay, here we are, hour number two, and we have a busy hour ahead of you. And this is going to be interesting because it's part two of a very unusual conversation with Lieutenant General Donald Ware. George Filer is standing by. Major Filer, are you there, sir?
I'm here.
Welcome aboard.
All the way from
Medford, New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Yeah. And I think, do we have Frank as well?
I am here, Jeff. Good to hear your voice.
Okay, thank you. Frank Chile is standing by also. He has been working to put some extraordinary programs together for us to entertain ourselves and to inform ourselves. And Lieutenant General Donald Ware is standing by as well. You there, Don?
I am, but please don't promote me. I'm a lieutenant colonel, not a lieutenant general.
No, I can promote anybody. That's the nice thing about talk radio. All right. Anyway, Lieutenant Colonel. You were 6 months away. All right.
Yeah, lieutenant generals don't get to retire at age 47 and not have
That's
to work
true.
For a living. It usually takes them longer to do that.
Indeed. All right. We're back tonight to carry on with Don and learn more about some of his extraordinary information that he was kind enough to share with us last visit, which you can hear in the archives. So, Don, why don't you go ahead and pick it up if you can remember where we were. And before we do that, let me go back to George and ask him what he thinks about the information so far shared. You know, you've been friends for a long time. George, what did we learn last time and where are we?
Don always has excellent information, and I think people should know that he's a former fighter pilot and has a B.S. in mechanical engineering from Duke University and also a master's degree in nuclear engineering. In other words, he has a excellent background, and he was the Eastern Regional Director of MUFON prior to he becoming it, the same job, so to speak. And matter of fact, he's partially responsible for putting out Filer's files, because he put out something very similar to my files when he was in that position as a regional director. So always looked up to Don and his excellent information.
George, let me comment that master's degree was from the Air Force Institute of Technology, where I had an opportunity to take courses in electric propulsion systems and physics of the upper atmosphere, things that I thought might be useful in the future in UFO research.
Well, very good. Indeed, it is turning out to be that.
And a materials course, too, I got to take. Only had room for three electives.
Huh. Okay. All right, Don, let's jump right back into where we were, if we can kind of grab a thread, and we'll follow it.
I was just starting with what I think is a very important document, because strange circumstances happened to me a couple of years ago. I had an email from someone I'd never heard of. It had his real name. It just said good morning, and he introduced himself, told me everything about him, including his 195 IQ, worked for the Psi Corps at the NRO. That's something a lot of people recognize as the shadow world government, perhaps headquarters. He tells me that everything that people used to think of about Majestic and PI-40, a later name for it, probably 5412 Committee is another name, all takes place at the NRO headquarters, which on this block piece of paper I'm looking at is the smallest box on here. But he says there's the president connected to him, and then there are four blocks below that he says is the public face of the shadow world government. That's the National Security Council, our president's top advisors, the National Security Agency, which is a world organization, not a U.S. organization, the Director of Central Intelligence, and the Central Intelligence Agency, another world organization that's not a U.S. organization exclusively. It's the same thing as NSA is the same thing as, I think, as MI5 and the CIA is the same thing as MI6. They're kind of,
that's right.
They're all part of a world organization.
That's right. Yeah.
And the rest of this chart, the bottom of it, I think, is really quite interesting because it came in. This chart is says Star Wars City up top, revised 70401, sent to us by Colonel Steve Wilson, who said he was head of the Special Security 1010 Special Security Squadron that tasks the crash retrieval teams and the Men in Black, the cleanup teams. But below that, you have IBM, which apparently got the contract early on to provide computer services to our inner Earth system. And in other words, the shadow world government folks are assisted by IBM. It has Rockefeller Company that manages the finances to support all these black budgets and stuff that's being done in the, I'm learning now, in the inner Earth and our off-planet bases. And you got something called Decision Science Applications, Inc., which I know did a little bit of research. I couldn't find out much about them. But then it lists a number of organizations that create the stuff that's needed in all these different parts of the shadow world government, that is the inner Earth system and the off-planet bases. And they are Rockwell International. And one of the neatest things I found on their website was written decades ago, which lays out a plan for at what time they will be developing bases on the moon and Mars and a bunch of other, at what time they will hit certain milestones in development of this fantastic advanced society that some folks have and can't release that technology to us because we still got too many people who'd use it to kill the rest of us faster. Martin Marietta, I used to work for North American Aviation, by the way, which Rockwell absorbed after I left that company in 57.
Right.
And then Martin Marietta, which people know for many different reasons, is associated with people that are keeping a lid on the UFO subject. I remember Jim Greenan lived in Orlando, and I were working as investigators there in Florida. We always assigned two investigators to every case, and we had a lady who's quite psychic, and she was being picked up by flying saucers and leaving big track of the flying saucer in the condo lawn, which they couldn't get anything to grow there. They had to dig up a bunch of dirt and replace the dirt before they could get grass. But she says she was taken to Martin Marietta, and that flying saucer landed inside the fence of Martin Marietta, and she was taken inside into a room where there were ETs and humans working together. And that was it. And she could communicate telepathically with the head guy in the some flying saucers, which is kind of neat. Then you got Lockheed, which you know has the Skunk Works, which Kelly Johnson was the first head of that. Back in the 50s, I think, and
yeah,
he made some interesting
statements.
He
made some phenomenal statements right toward the end of his life.
Right, and Ben Rich, I think, was the next one, and he said one time, we now have the technology to take E.T. home, and then he said, anything you can imagine, we've already done.
Anything you can imagine, we've already done. That, Ben Rich said right. that, I believe, at UCLA in his farewell around the country of speeches. It's worth looking up. Do a search for Ben Rich, just like it sounds, and then just put E.T. after it, whatever. He said things that are true. He said things that are phenomenal and fantastic, and they must never be forgotten.
Right. So the other companies, I'll just read off the names. You've got Boeing, which has a Phantom Works, just like Lockheed has a
Skunk Works. Yeah.
You got Aerojet Electric Systems, Teledyne Ryan, Ford Aerospace, McDonnell Douglas, and the Fujiaka Company, a Japanese company. I thought that was interesting because in Carl Sagan's movie Contact, it showed a big role in outer space, in constructions of things in outer space by the Japanese companies.
Mm.
And you also have connecting between IBM, Kamen Industries, between IBM and Decision Science Applications on this chart, you got Kamen Industries. I did a little study on that. And they have a couple of hundred distribution centers scattered all over the world. They're the ones that serve the same purpose as Walmart's 200 distribution centers that provide the stuff for the people on the surface of the planet. So Kamen Industries apparently provides the stuff for the people that live in the inner Earth and on our off-planet bases.
Mm-hmm.
And if you recall, Dr. Kasher, I think, did a study by checking the records of everything that is shipped into the East Coast and West Coast naval supply depots.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been able to use a computer to find out how much of that stuff went to the Atlantic Fleet and went to the Pacific Fleet. And he says there's a whole lot more going in than there is coming out to the Navy. So he knows it's going somewhere else. He didn't know exactly where, but, you know, we've heard a lot of rumors about underwater bases and such as that. So I went to Georgia Tech last year and listened to Dr. Romig, the current head of the Lockheed Skunk Works,
mm-hmm.
give a lecture to a standing room only, the biggest lecture room they had, standing room only graduate aerospace engineers at Georgia Tech, a really good engineering school.
Yes.
And he showed pictures, and he told those guys about the Dark Star, which he called a space plane that takes off here and goes somewhere else and comes back here.
Uh-huh.
And he showed a picture. I thought that was all classified, and this was just last year. And if it was, he unclassified it in that room. And that was about the same time that Aviation Week in Space Technology was showing pictures of Black Star, which is the interstellar ship that, I think it was Randy Kramer says has the capability of going between different stars in our galaxy, a star system, or whatever you want to call it. So, and that vehicle reminds me a lot of Battlestar Galactica, if you remember that old series.
Sure.
So things are really coming together. I recently found that, I lived there three blocks south of the Eglin Air Force Base for 29 years before I moved up here to Georgia. And I would get a lot of reports as a state director of Florida. Started out, I was the only MUFON guy in those four counties. And because of the Gulf Breeze sightings, we built that up to the most active and largest, I think, MUFON group in the world. So I was getting all these reports of UFOs being seen over the Eglin Reservation. Thought that was interesting. I was at Hurlburt Field, home of the Special Operations Center, and I was doing some bird research because I was also the bird count coordinator for Choctawhatchee Audubon Society. And during our first Breeding Bird Atlas project, starting in 86, I wanted to go up to count what was in a heronry off the north end of the Hurlburt Field, which goes north-south, one end over going out over the Gulf and one going up into the marsh. And the only way you can get there, nobody can get there, that's the only piece of the Special Operations Field there that is not in view of anywhere, even people on the golf course. But so you had to have the airdrome officer give you a special letter, and you have to have security police escort when you go up there. I thought it was interesting. The only thing that was up there that anybody might want to see is a parking place, big parking pad out there that would be a perfect place if somebody wants to land there at Hurlburt. In an unusual vehicle, that's the place to do it. So I've recently discovered that the Air Force Special Academy that has an entrance to the Air Force Academy is where the astronauts for the NRO folks get trained. That's their initial training. You know, when I went through pilot training, I had to go to a number of different places. I went to Lackland for 30-day orientation, and then I went to Bainbridge for prop training or the primary training, and then I went to Selma Air Force Base for the T-33 training or the jet training, and then I went to Luke for combat training. They move you around when you're in training. But I've learned that they have a flying saucer simulator somewhere.
Who's they, Don? Who's they? Who had
the people who train astronauts for the fleet that McKinnon was taught. You know, you brought up McKinnon, the guy.
Sure.
Hacked.
Yeah, that's the U.S. Navy's deep space fleet, which is operable and obviously staged off of our atmosphere and goes all over the known solar system as far as we know.
So it appears that at least some simulator training is done that it may be responsible for all those, you know, a lot of those flying saucers we get over Eglin Air Force Base. However, I was working with a psychic lady during the Gulf Breeze sightings, and I really wanted to meet these guys and get taken on board and get in a little tour. I thought that would be neat. So with the psychic, we arranged to meet actually on the reservation. And they didn't show, and we were told by a Zeta, actually, that was not a good place to meet because they would be constantly tracked. They have on the bombing ranges at Eglin these super radars that can track you, mm-hmm. you know, from several different places around the reservation. So that got canceled out, unfortunately. So, it's a whole different world. I think the reason this guy introduced himself to me that said he worked at the NRO Psi Corps is because, in fact, he told me, he says, this piece of paper got released to the public in 2001 and nobody paid any attention. So they want me to bring this paper to the attention of other people so they will get a better understanding of how the shadow world government works. And if they do get a better understanding, it might help them overcome fear of the shadow world government. And that makes sense to me. I know, and he knows, that it's human nature to fear what you don't understand. So I don't mind assisting them in that field, is to help people understand, you know, what's going on in the organizational structure. Does that make sense?
100%. Sure.
Good. So let's see, what else... What else did I mention that I didn't have time to talk about last time?
Could I make a comment?
Yes.
Oh, of course, George, please.
I imagine to a lot of the people out there, this sounds, I don't know if the right word is unbelievable, but I've been contacted by several people after giving, you know, conferences who have told me at least part of this, certainly that we have these fantastic craft and that we can do a lot of things with them. And matter of fact, they even claim to have designed them. A fellow named William Tompkins is coming out with a book that claims that he's done a lot of these things. I'm just saying that it's not just one source. There's multiple sources that are coming out with this kind of information. And I think we all have to look at what they have to say. Because they're retired and, you know, not have long to live, but they have a fantastic amount of information that they have you know, that's all been secret up till now. And apparently, at least a lot of this is being allowed to come out into the public realm.
Yeah, it's coming out, you know, from all different directions. It tells me that we're getting close to some major event that's gonna force more openness. The politicians don't want to talk about it. You know, if Obama would acknowledge any of this stuff, the media, he wouldn't be able to do what we elected him to do. He would be pestered to death by every kind of media on UFO stuff instead of the political stuff that he's supposed to be working on, like putting war behind us. That's a big job, but that's a job that Obama and anybody that follows him is going to be top of their list of assignments by the world government. You know, when Obama was elected, a bad thing had happened because of what George 43 did. Is he caused a decrease in the respect that the heads of many other countries gave us because we didn't coordinate with some we should have coordinated before we went into Iraq. And some of them were, some of our best allies were really unhappy about that. So Obama's top assignment when he was elected to get our other allied heads of state more back on our side is to try to undo the damage that was done that decreased the status of the United States in the eyes of some of these other countries. And that was the motive for his speech in Cairo. You know, I've heard a lot of people say lots of bad things about that speech, but he was told not to make enemies out of the 1.3 billion Muslims on this country. It's the radical that are our enemies, not
I understand. Well, radicalism in any group is the worst.
Right.
Hold on, Don. We have to pause here just for a couple of minutes, and we'll come right back with more as we continue. All right, Don, we're back. Let's go right ahead. Very interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. Okay, I want to thank you for putting a website or two on your homepage, I guess it is.
Sure.
I don't have much time to explore on people's pages. But I do want to mention, again, a couple of websites. TimeStreamPictures.com. His website that has, on the homepage, it's got one DVD and three books, all of which I think are very important. And the one I'm particularly interested in people reading now is called The Man with the Golden Sword, because it tells who it is that the CIA provided the official disclosure that so many people have been begging for so many years. And if you don't know who the author of that is, his name is John B. Leith, an OSS agent in World War II.
Yeah, you mentioned that last time. Yeah, Leith.
Yeah. That's important because soon I think we're going to get to see more from him. He wrote two books.
He's still very much around and very active.
No, he died in 1998.
Okay.
He was born in He died at age 78. He was born in 1920. And his researcher, the guy he calls researcher in the book, was born in 1918. He was a priest. He was a general. And he's a really good researcher and a very daring man. But those items on there and the two books about, from the Atlanteans, I think are extremely important to understand what's going on, too. And, my website, where I just archived 15 of the papers that I had written over the years as MUFON regional director and director of the International UFO Congress. It's fun reading. Some of those are just one or two pages long, but I've had all these really interesting, strange cases that happened to me, and I just felt like I had to document them somewhere. And so I took a course called Writing for Generals, which is putting a lot of information into a few number of words. Because, generals often have to, that was before they had a lot of encryption stuff they had now. They had to communicate with other generals without secretaries in the middle. So their staff people would go through this course how to get a lot of information in a few words so that the generals wouldn't have to handwrite so many words when they want to communicate with other generals. And so that course there at their university has served me well in writing things like I write here, like the rest of the missing A-10 story was one of them. The easy way to Brooksville, where there was a lady that saw a bunch of UFOs. Her husband was out of town. She saw UFOs down in Brooksville, Florida, come through her wall. She'd never seen an alien before. And she looked really surprised and screamed, and these five little guys just backed right up through the wall. And she just, her husband was out of town. She needed somebody to talk to. And I was putting on something called a face-to-face invitational at a Gulf Breeze UFO conference. I did that 11 years in a row. The day after the MUFON conference, Walt would just reserve a room for me to put 22 people around the table with 50 people around the outside observing. And I would get all these UFO researchers that came in to speak at the MUFON conferences, or later, other conferences later, to sit down across the table and speak to each other about the leading edge questions of the year. And I would get other researchers to help me, and we would figure out what those questions are, five or six of them, and I'd send them out at least a month in advance to all the people that would come into the conference. And Walt would give me the registration list, and so I could figure out who it was I wanted to have sitting at that table and sitting as just guests. I had door guards, and it was fun. I had a lot of people tell me they learned more at the face-to-face invitational meetings than they learned the entire conference prior to that. But I did that for 11 years, and turned out quite well. And unfortunately, at the Albuquerque conference, Gene Andrus was slipped into the room late in the day and realized that I had put a psychic at the table. And she was the lady that the shadow world government used to teach a broader worldview to a lot of the people in those companies that I just read to you, people that are making stuff for the inner earth and interacting with ETs. The first group was Wackenhut, the people who are guarding the bases where flying saucers are coming and going. A lot of them are Wackenhut guards.
Okay, well, they've been involved with us for a long time.
Yeah, and it was one of them that led to a war and underground in Dulce Base where a lot of people died.
Don, hold on, please. Okay. I got to ask a question. The Dulce underground war, has been talked about for a long time. There's not one hard piece of evidence sustaining or validating it. How is it that you have come to know it, and how firmly do you believe in the content of the story?
Well, UFO Highway is what happened is the psychiatrist at Edwards Air Force Base was called in. After the war, they locked down Dulce Base. Nobody could come or go. Well, the psychiatrists and stuff. The base was locked down, and they had to get a bunch of psychiatrists in there and figure out to triage these guys, to figure out what they're going to do with them. Some people had to go to hospitals because of that war, some mental hospitals and some others. But the guy, and I don't remember his name right now, but he was moving from the West Coast, retiring, and moving to the East Coast. He had an opportunity to disappear from everybody he was in contact in the West and move under a different name and disappear from society. So he decided, since we wanted to know what happened in underground in Dulce, he decided to sit down with a UFO researcher, respected researcher, and tell him the story and answer his questions. And that book is published. It's called UFO Highway. It's published as the lead interview with several more lesser interviews behind it. But it tells you how at Los Alamos they make these nuclear power sources that are totally independent. You put it on a little rail car, ship it out of Los Alamos, and it goes into, actually Dulce has two of them now, I think. It's about the size of an SUV, and it will provide all the electricity you need in that base for 10 years with no service. They shove that thing into where you have all your electrical connections, and they plug into it. 10 years later, they'll send you a new one with new fuel in it. Pull the other one out, put that one in, and your base, like Dulce, has got electricity for another 10 years. It's kind of a neat system. So I expect there are a number of those under there. When I retired from the Air Force, I don't think I told you this before, I was given a set of orders. This was the end of 82. I had a 6-year period as a regular officer, where if they needed more bodies like me, I was committed to go. And my orders had me going to Mount Weather. If they had an event, the only reason they would recall me is because it would have to be a nuclear issue to recall me, I think. Because I did have the Master's in Nuclear Engineering, and I did teach other fighter pilots all about the latest nuclear weapons, the tactical nuclear weapons. And, I was Lieutenant Colonel. I would be in a staff position in the underground White House there at Mount Weather. But I'm not sure where I was going with that. It just came to mind.
It's okay.
Interesting. Well, I had those orders too, Don.
Where were they going to send you?
Mount Weather.
Okay. Same place. I didn't know that. See, we learned something.
I didn't either. I didn't know you had to.
Right.
Because I was an intelligence officer, so I guess they picked different people. Maybe they picked people that knew about UFOs. That's interesting.
That could very well be. Yeah, that's a thought I hadn't had before. Okay, anyway, that book, UFO Highway, is the authority, in my opinion, on the Dulce War. That was your question.
Correct.
If people haven't read that, that's a good book. Read it right after you read The Man with the Golden Sword.
Okay, very good. What is your understanding currently of how many different groups are visiting here, approximately, who have meaningful interaction with the so-called government and military?
Let me just say, the author of that book I just mentioned, The Man with the Golden Sword, was used by the CIA. Because After he had won the top award for valor from seven different nations, he was the most highly decorated soldier of any war ever, which couldn't talk about it until after he died in 1998. And then he stayed for 5 years studying literature at Oxford. At Oxford, they can teach you pretty good literature. And then he went to Canada, got married, and went back to school and got a degree in journalism so he could earn a living from his writing skills. And then he retired, and he was used by the CIA for what some people might call, I think should properly be called, official disclosure. They arranged for him to interview the ambassador from Venus, which has a lead position among our solar system societies, with the Professor Jarmusch, I think his name is, from Shambhala. He's an Atlantean. You know, Atlanteans were on this planet for 60,000 years. It's just that the last of their islands in the Atlantic went under during some Earth traumas 10,500 years ago, but they didn't all leave the planet. The selfish ones left the planet, but the ones that were the political prisoners working in the mines out under the oceans did not leave. They stayed after some of their friends on the surface stayed and helped rescue them from being trapped in the mines underneath the oceans. And so he had a couple of interviews face to face. He and his researcher friend with that guy, the professor, and one of them was in the. I think it was on Andrews Air Force Base. He says it was in Maryland. They probably had him up on the surface here lecturing to the National War College. These guys look quite much like we do. They had the King of Bodland coming up here lecturing at different in New York and here. And that's an interesting guy. These guys are the rulers of the inner earth peoples, because some of them were, you know, had been Vikings before, some of them had been Germans that went under 500 years ago, and some were the Germans that went under after World War II. And anyway, this guy is a guy who was used because of his photographic memory, his writing skills, and his 25 years journalism experience. He was an important asset for spreading information to those when the time is right. He already could not publish anything until after he was dead. So he was a perfect guy to choose for this, and his OSS friend, the general who was also a priest. And we are so much closer to disclosure. Another thing's going on in the news that probably means more to me than anybody else is 28 September, when the Pope is going to address a joint session of the Congress, U.S. Congress and Senate. Because, you know, as I see things, we're getting really close to the return of Christ, because he's going to be our graduation speaker. The guys below our feet and the guys on our off-planet bases have already graduated. They have been invited by the Confederation of Planets, I think they refer to it as, most people do. I've got the symbol of that organization. Somebody gave me, I've been wearing it on my lapel at UFO conferences six times a year for 20, 30 years now. Not it was just given to me 15 years ago, I think. And it's really kind of mind-boggling. I think that before Christ is going to come here in some form and address the General Assembly of the United Nations and announce to us that we on the surface of this planet are no longer restricted. The planet is no longer quarantined, as you know, as happened to when Lucifer rebelled. Lucifer headed our star system 200,000 years ago. He had headed it for about 300,000 years. If you're a student of the Urantia book, it has all these dates in it. The Bible doesn't put dates on them. that the Rancher book does. And when he rebelled, he was replaced, but he still hung around until Jesus came here a while back before he got locked up. He could tempt people to make selfish decisions and his deputy, but they couldn't violate our free will. They could tempt us to make selfish decisions, but they couldn't do anything against our free will because God gave us free will. Everybody knows that. And so before, you're going to have Jesus appearing before the United Nations General Assembly, you have to have the Pope appearing before a major group like the joint session of the U.S. Congress. That's a required step, and the kind of protocol, I think, goes on. So that's why I was really pleased to see that the Pope does have that speaking assignment on the 28th of September of this year. So the next thing that's going to happen probably is some kind of Earth traumas, because it's more of an intuitive feeling that we're going to experience some kind of Earth trauma prior to the return of Christ. He's going to be kind of our savior after this thing, so to speak. And Earth traumas are going to probably cause martial law. There's going to be a lot of chaos. You know, if half of Los Angeles slips into the sea, it's going to be chaos. I think it was Kissinger one time that predicted at a Bilderberger meeting that there will be a time the people in Los Angeles will be very pleased that that martial law was declared in Southern California. Do you remember that statement?
I do.
Well, all these things that people talk about and are so afraid of are things that are all connected to the future that I see, which is a very positive future. It's a graduation to the golden age. But, you know, if you have to rebuild a golden age, mm-hmm. some of the old age has got to go away. I feel blessed to have been selected to help ease humanity into the golden age. I think I've been used in that position since 1989.
Right. Well, anything's possible, Don. I don't rule anything out in these days. George, any comments on what Don has put on the table during this hour?
Well, most Christians have been waiting for 2,000 years for mm-hmm. Christ to come back, and Revelation certainly indicates that a lot of things have, you know, happened. Israel becoming a state, and the wars and earthquakes and everything that certainly can fit a lot of the prophecy into what he's saying.
And, one of my
the
papers,
world, world needs a lot of help right now.
The last paper on my website, Jeff, is called Planet X, A Philosophical View. And it talks about that issue I just mentioned concerning Earth traumas. If you take the words in the last book of the Bible and you try to translate those words to modern-day language, you know, it all makes sense. It's going to be serious Earth traumas, a lot of ash fall. Of course, we're seeing it in bits and pieces in Chile and other places now all around the Ring of Fire.
Yeah, I think there's 9 volcanoes went off this week.
Right.
There's a lot going on the Earth, tectonically, mm-hmm. earthquakes mm-hmm. and so on.
Right.
Tectonic plates are moving.
Right. Okay, Frank Chile, step in here. You got about a minute. You need to contribute here.
Well, some profound statements have been made, and I was hoping that Don could share some stories with you and your audience regarding the naval attaché to John F. Kennedy, Holden, and also share one of the stories he said about going from Nevada to the moon for luncheon, and in having a group of folks from the Pentagon arrange to be at certain coordinates to have a rendezvous with a craft.
Okay, real quick, I'll try to hit those.
Go ahead.
Yeah, My next-door neighbor, Nellis, was head of the command post,
mm-hmm.
kind of job that George is familiar with. And twice a year, he would go over to Area 51 on the Sabreliner, and my friend would just hang out for him and came back, and rumors started going around that these big-time commanders were being taken to the moon for lunch. And I see that becoming more probable all the time, the more I learn about the advances that went on that had been hidden from us. Now, William Holden, who was a steward on Air Force One, had two experiences which he shared with me. Interesting. I think he might have written about some of them. But he was at Alamogordo, put on a bus with blacked-out windows, taken up into a box canyon you can only get to from White Sands. And he was told to stay in the bus. But the driver got out to smoke a cigarette. He went out and stood in the door and looked out, and there were flying saucers sitting on the ramp and looked like ETs and humans in their flight suits, you know, there beside them. There was a joint human-alien thing going on in that Box Canyon, accessible in White Sands. And the other one was he was put on an airplane, flown to Hawaii, put on a C-54, which he was quite familiar with, and they flew him out a certain time and landed. They're not supposed to know where they were. I think they were somewhere else in Hawaii. He's convinced that the only place he could have landed that much flying time to C-54 was back in Hawaii. There were a bunch of people, a whole plane full, were sitting in bleachers, had a flying saucer come up out of the ocean, put on an air show for him, and go back down into the ocean. They just wanted those people to see him. And when he was there with Kennedy, Ich bin ein Berliner speech, there was a flying saucer on the front page of the German newspaper, and he set the paper in front of Kennedy, and he said, with his coffee, and he pointed to the flying saucer and said, "Mr. President, what do you think of that?" And he reversed the question on him. He says, "Son, what do you think of that?" And William Holden says, "I think there are too many planets out there to think that they aren't inhabited by somebody." And Jack Kennedy said to William Holden, "Yes, son, you're right." Closest thing I've heard of, you know, from a president admitting that we're not alone.
Well, that sums it up pretty well. We are and never have been alone. And the people who have promulgated that lie are really among the lowest of the low. It's just, it's disgusting. We have a birthright, a God-given right to know what's going on. And it's just time to stop playing games.
May I say a little short rebuttal to that?
Please.
The U.S. policy codified in January 53 was it's in the national interest to keep the general public from getting too excited about the alien presence. The world policy is to put information into the public domain so it's available for those seeking it, mm-hmm. like you and I, without right. forcing it on those who aren't ready because it disturbs their spiritual evolution.
Well,
they still have choices to make.
I would doubt that they're evolving much, Don. I'm sorry.
Well, they're required to make choices, though, without yeah. having access to those from off-planet. That's because they're still under the restriction, the quarantine by the Lucifer Rebellion.
All right.
But the rebellion doesn't apply to everybody. It only applies to some.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. All right. We are way over time. Thank you very much, Don, as always.
You're welcome.
It's been a really very interesting conversation. And Frank, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jeff, once again. Hope you feel much better.
Okay. Thanks. And Major Filer, thank you, as always.
You're welcome.
You take care. We'll talk soon.
Anytime you need us.
Okay. Thanks. Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's hour number two, and we will be back.